Thank you for listening to the Crossroads Christian Church podcast. Crossroads is a multicultural gospel-centered church serving the Bay Ridge and Sunset Park neighborhoods of Brooklyn, New York. If you would like to learn more about our faith community, please visit crossroadsbrooklyn.com.
We are beginning a study on what the Apostle Paul calls the fruit of the Spirit. We just finished studying the letter to the Galatians that Paul wrote, and in chapter 5 of that letter, Paul says this. He says, "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law." And over the next several weeks, we want to study each of these traits, these virtues that Paul says, if we are walking by the Spirit, these are virtues that we will possess as followers of Jesus. And Paul says, if you're walking by the Spirit, these are the virtues that you will grow in. These are the virtues, this is the fruit that your life will produce. So if you're a tree, the fruit that you will produce is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, and self-control. And here's what James, this is Jesus' half-brother, this is what he says about patience in James chapter 5. He says, this is chapter 5, verse 7. He says, "Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remained steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful." Oysters. Does anybody like oysters in here? Just a few. Okay. I do. Because oysters are in the sea, they often have grains of sand that make their way into their shell as intruders or irritants. And this isn't uncommon for any sort of creature or shell that lives in the sea. It's not uncommon for a piece of sand to get lodged within its shell. And usually, when this happens, the oyster, through various means, is able to expel the grain of sand from its shell. Problem solved. Grain of sand comes into the shell. It irritates it a little bit. It pushes it out. No problem solved. But sometimes that grain of sand, that irritant, becomes so lodged within the shell of the oyster that no matter how hard the oyster tries, no matter how hard it works, it cannot get rid of the grain of sand. It can't get rid of it. The oyster becomes irritated and frustrated. It does everything in its power to rid itself of this annoyance or this irritant. And eventually, when this happens, the oyster realizes that there's nothing it can do. And so it embraces the grain of sand. It embraces that irritant, that piece of adversity that's entered into its life. And the oyster begins to do something spectacular. It begins to coat the grain of sand with a liquid coating that lubricates and makes the grain smooth so it doesn't irritate it anymore. And it does this over and over and over again, covering this grain of sand with this liquid. And eventually that coating, it hardens and it becomes something that we pay top dollar for. See, that irritating, frustrating, thorn in the side, how can anything good from this come from this grain of sand? It becomes a beautiful pearl. That's where pearls come from. A pearl is a grain of sand that entered into an oyster, and the oyster covered it. And a frustrated oyster, in trying to relieve the pain, trying to make it through adversity, creates this beautiful thing that we pay big bucks for called a pearl. And Brian Loritz, who is a pastor in San Francisco, used to live here in New York, one of the leaders in sort of the multicultural church movement, he says that a pearl is the fruit of a frustrated oyster. He says, if there was no frustration or irritation, if there was no patience, there would be no pearl, he says. See, we all want our lives to be great in here. We all want our lives to be beautiful. We want our lives to be something that people can look at and admire in some ways. We want our lives to be productive. We want our lives to be a beautiful pearl. But the testimony of the scriptures In the image of the pearl, show us that the most beautiful aspects of our lives and our character come through adversity, through difficult seasons. And see, we want our lives to be great. We want our lives to be a pearl. But we don't always enjoy the process. We don't enjoy the grains of sand. See, the process requires patience. And patience implies irritation. So you may have heard the joke, I hear this a lot, where people say, I really want to be more patient, but I'm afraid to ask God to make me more patient. You ever heard that? Because they're like, I don't want God to give opportunities that would cause me to need to be patient. Because I'm afraid that God would put me in situations where I would have to learn to be patient. Because we know that the virtue of patience is only demonstrated in the midst of adversity. And so if we want to be patient people, it means we've got to endure adversity. And patience is only demonstrated in the midst of adversity. And this goes against one of the core values of our modern culture. And one of the core values of our modern culture is that we are living in a culture of now, aren't we? See, we value our culture, especially here in New York. We value productivity. We value comfort above essentially everything else. We want to be productive and we want to be comfortable and we want to be those things now or yesterday. See, every product on the market just about plays on this idea, this desire. Instant gratification, instant rice, 8-minute abs, right? As if you can get 8-minute abs, right? Or instant rice, I mean, you can do it. It's kind of gross, sticky, and I don't know. But this week, I actually saw on Amazon, it suggested that I would want this, the 1-minute devotional Bible. As if we can become spiritually mature with a quick fix, a shot in the arm, microwaved spirituality. We have apps on our phone that are designed to help us be more efficient. Instant messenger. We want instant gratification all the time. In our city, we walk fast, we talk fast, and God help us if someone in front of us doesn't know what they want to order when they get in front of the counter, right? We live in a culture of now. We get annoyed with the BQE. We get annoyed with the R-Train because they test our patience daily. We're called the city that never sleeps. Why don't we sleep? Because we can't slow down. Because we have to be productive. We can't rest. We have to do these things now. Did you know that even the layout of our city, the way our city was planned and designed, was designed for productivity and efficiency? The grid in Manhattan forces us to look up and ahead and move along. You contrast this with a city like Paris, which is designed to, it causes us to meander and wander and just enjoy the sights and the smells and the city. New York's not like that. Manhattan is not like that. Manhattan inspires us to hustle and move and get out the way and jaywalk and do everything that you do as a New Yorker. And listen, we live in a culture of now, a culture of constant movement, instant gratification. And if we're honest, we're exhausted. We're exhausted. Look at the face of the person next to you in the train tomorrow when you're commuting to work. We're exhausted. And we wish there were a better way. And the Apostle Paul says, look, the spirit of the age may say that we live in a culture of now, but the fruit of the Spirit is a life of patience. And we as Christians, we are called to stand as a counterculture to our city, to show them a better way. Abundant life, as Jesus calls it. And we can show this to our city if we demonstrate the fruit of the Spirit, if we can show our city that we can be patient amidst all the chaos and amidst all of the calls for productivity. So how do we cultivate patience? How do we cultivate patience? I want to show you three things, and the first thing I want you to see is how patience is cultivated. I want you to see the laboratory of patience. What I mean is this is where patience is created. This is where it's formed. And the laboratory in which patience is concocted in our lives, developed, is called adversity. See, patience cannot exist apart from some sort of adversity, some sort of irritant. I mean, the word patience that Paul uses in the Greek is the word makrothumia. Macro meaning large or long. Thumia is the word where we get the word thermometer, meaning it's this idea of a boiling point. And the word here is anger, long anger, or as the old English translations of the Bible translate it, as long suffering. The fruit of the Spirit is long suffering. We translate that as patience. See, adversity is any time your plans or your preferences or your comfort or your productivity is disrupted or irritated. See, this is where impatience rears its ugly head, and impatience can manifest itself in a lot of ways. It can manifest itself in anger, in shouting, or bitterness, or pride. Somebody doesn't think the way you think, or they're not coming to the conclusions that you are as quickly as you are, and you look down on them and you think you're superior because you know better. Or you shout and you get angry. See, impatience manifests itself in many ways. But adversity is any time that our plans or preferences are disrupted. And this is where impatience shows itself, or this is where patience can be cultivated. And there are three primary ways I think that adversity happens in our lives every day: circumstances, people, and time. See, circumstances can cause us to be impatient or give us an opportunity to demonstrate patience. When your train is slow, anybody who lives in Bay Ridge knows what that's like, okay? We know what it's like to have a slow train. Has anybody ever tried to come home past 11 o'clock and catch the R train at 59th? It just doesn't happen. Or the BQE is slammed with traffic. That's adversity. That's adversity. It interferes with our plans to get to work on time and our preferences not to be stuck in a crowded subway car or a platform or in traffic. See, when we become impatient in this area, we roll our eyes at people, we allow our blood pressure to go up and our back muscles tighten on the train. That's a small example, right? That's adversity. It causes us to be impatient. But what about the larger examples where our circumstances create adversity in our lives? You lose a job. Your child gets diagnosed with something, or your spouse walks out on you. You lose an apartment, or perhaps you're in your 30s or your 40s and you're still single. And you become impatient, and in your impatience, you lose hope. Or what about in cases of injustice? Systemic racism is still prevalent. Human trafficking is still present. Systemic poverty is still present. And how long, O Lord, we pray, must we endure these things? Endure these circumstances. And sometimes in our impatience, we can become bitter, we can lose hope, and you can stop working for good, or you can get angry at others. Circumstances can cause adversity in our lives and give us the opportunity to demonstrate patience. What about people? People can create adversity in our lives. And listen, you guys, is this a safe space? Are you guys going to judge me with what I'm about to tell you? My wife, okay, she has a saying that she often preaches to me when I come home from work every day. She'll say, "Hey, how was work today, you know, honey?" And I say, "Well, I was hoping to write my sermon. I was hoping to answer all these emails that keep piling up. And I was hoping to do some planning. But three people dropped by my office and they wanted to talk. And I didn't get anything done." And my wife has this saying. She says, "Will, remember, people are the ministry," is what she says. And what she's reminding me is that people are not interruptions. People are people to be ministered to. And be patient with people. Emails can wait. The sermon can be a B-minus sermon instead of an A+. It's okay. Spend time with people. You're a pastor. That's what you do. And you may look at me and you're like, you're a pastor? And you get irritated with us? Yes, and you get irritated with your co-workers too, okay? So don't judge, all right? Safe space, right? One of the reasons that we seldom, and it really, you know what it's like to be irritated with co-workers and irritated with people that interrupt your plans for the day when you set out your little daily calendar. And we become impatient. And one of the reasons that you find that we seldom find patience in your life is because we so prioritize productivity, getting things done. We value a life free of adversity. And listen, when productivity and achievement become the overarching priorities in your life, your identity will always hang in the balance of your time and what you can accomplish. Your identity will hang by the thread of what you can achieve and accomplish in a certain amount of time. And if that's the case, people will then become objects in your life rather than people. There will be people who advance your agenda, and there will be people who won't. And so you'll either get annoyed with people or you'll use them or abuse them. See, but the testimony of the scriptures is that people are gifts. They are not the supporting cast of your story, but they are people. And when we see people as such, not as interruptions or irritants, but as people to be loved and seen and known and listened to, then it opens up our capacity for patience. And then in that moment, our patience is a gift for others. That's why Paul calls it a fruit. It's sweet for them to taste when we're patient as well. James says in this passage in verse 9, he says, "Don't grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged." Don't grumble against others. Time also is an irritant, an adversity. And this can be a combination of the first two, but in the end, you feel adversity in your life because sometimes things aren't happening at the speed that you were hoping. You're not married yet. The sickness isn't cured yet. Justice in whatever area you're fighting for hasn't been experienced yet, so you grow impatient. See, patience assumes that you are in the midst of something that you do not like and that you cannot fix. You are in a situation where your network, your wealth, and your ability cannot fix the situation that you're in. You are in it, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's what adversity is. And in the midst of adversity, James says, be patient. See, adversity creates the opportunity for patience. And our ability to be patient is cultivated and formed in how we respond to adversity and how we treat others in the midst of it. So that's the laboratory of patience. Patience is formed in the midst of adversity. What's the process of patience? Paul says in verse 10, "As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful." Paul in this passage, or James in this passage, uses the metaphor of a farmer. And it's a good analogy because farmers, they understand what they can and they cannot control. This is city people in here, but just think for a moment what a farmer's life must be like. Farmers, they wake up early, they prepare the land, they till the soil, they sow the seed, they do everything in their power to prepare for the harvest, for the food. They do everything they can to prepare for the harvest, but there's one thing that a farmer can't control, and that's the weather. You've got to have rain and you've got to have sunshine for crops to grow, and the farmer can't control that. But they don't sit around inactive going, "We're waiting on you, God, to send the rain and send the sunshine." They don't just sit around and do nothing and just wait for God to send those things. They're proactive. See, it's not patience to sit around and say, "I'm waiting on you, God." They prepare for the rain every day so that when it comes, the land bears fruit. And so what about you? What about us? In our lives, in the midst of adversity, do we till our land, plant seeds of good fruit during seasons of drought or adversity? Or do we get bitter and passive and sit on our hands and just wait for our circumstances to change? See, for example, if you're single in here and you're just waiting for somebody to come into your life, are you cultivating the soil of your life today? Are you cultivating the soil of your life now? Or are you just passively waiting on God to send you a spouse? Or are you actively preparing to be a good spouse when that day comes? See, are you studying the scriptures today? Are you praying for others today? Are you learning how to sacrifice for others today? Learning how to listen to others today? Learning how to resolve conflict with others today? Learning to lead others today so that when the day comes, you can be the spouse God has called you to be? Are you learning how to be a good roommate with your current roommate now? That's cultivating the soil so that you can be a good roommate to your spouse one day. Are you actively working on becoming the type of person that is capable of loving and leading the person that God wants to send your way? Or maybe you're in a difficult or a passionless marriage. Are you just passively hoping that your spouse will change? Or are you actively pursuing them even when they're not pursuing you back? Are you praying for them? Are you tangibly showing your love? Are you tangibly sacrificing for them? Are you loving them, praying that God, you're tilling the soil so that God can send the rain? Perhaps you have an addiction. Are you hoping that God will just magically send some moment in your life where you no longer desire that substance or that behavior? I see this with a lot of people. They've got a behavior in their life that they don't like, but they're just hoping that one day it'll go away, and it never will. They'll pray, "God, take this desire away from me." But are you actively working to put your sin to death? See, this is why we have a Celebrate Recovery ministry in our church. Meets on Monday nights at 7:30. So we believe that you cannot fully experience recovery from your addictions or behavior patterns without the Spirit of God moving in your life. But we also are convinced that our Celebrate Recovery program is there to help you prepare the soil, to put limits and structures in place, to put accountability in place so that you can play your part in overcoming addictions that you have in your life. See, this is what the process of patience is. It's active participation in the will of God, plus a hopeful trust that God will send the rain, metaphorically speaking. Think of a medical patient. We all go to the doctor at some point. We do our exercises. We take our medicine. But there will come a time in your life where you have to surrender all control to your doctor's expertise so that they can do the things that you cannot do. We eat right. We exercise. We take our medicine. But there will be times where we trust that the doctor must do the things that we cannot do. James, in this passage, he calls to mind the prophets. Jeremiah, Habakkuk, Isaiah, Malachi. See, if you know about the prophets, you know that they were the ones that when God's people were in exile at the end of the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, all of God's people were giving up hope. They were saying, God's promised a Messiah, but that Messiah is nowhere to be found. And they were giving up hope, and they were just assimilating into the Babylonian culture at the time. But it was the prophets who were saying, no, 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 no. Continue living out God's will for your life. Continue trusting. Continue believing. Because the Messiah is coming. Even though adversity is here, and even though you don't feel it now, the prophets, they were the ones who kept preaching. They kept praying. They kept obeying, even when it seemed like God was nowhere to be found. They said, keep believing. Almost saying, don't stop believing right here, but I'm not going to do that. And their preaching, their proclamation was not in vain because they were encouraging people to believe, to maintain hope, and to trust in God. And as Galatians says, we studied in chapter 4, that in the fullness of time, God did send his Son. And all that waiting that seemed like adversity, those prophets for hundreds of years saying, just wait, the Messiah is coming. They remained faithful, active participation in the will of God, trusting and with a hopeful trust that God in his faithfulness would send the Messiah, and he did. That's the process of patience. Active participation in the will of God now with a hopeful trust that God is faithful tomorrow. Now, here's the promise of patience. James says, be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. In verse 8, he says, you also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. And I love it because James, he was the pastor of the church in Jerusalem, we believe. And he's speaking of suffering and adversity. And he calls these Christians to be patient in the midst of their trials. They were being persecuted. And he says, continue living out the faith, continue proclaiming the message of Jesus, continue praying, continue living out the ways of the kingdom. He calls these Christians in the midst of all this adversity to be patient in the midst of their trials, but he assures them that there's a timeline to their troubles. He draws their attention to heaven. He says, be patient, therefore, until the coming of the Lord. Brian Laritz, he said, we can have hope because God put an until on it, is what he said, and I love that. There is a promise that there is an end to our suffering. So we wait patiently, trusting that God is bringing an end to all of our adversity. Or as the old gospel song says, trouble don't last always. Or as Job, who James calls to mind earlier, the biblical figure whose suffering was beyond what any of us could imagine. He was able to say in the midst of the pain, he lost his wife, lost his kids, lost his wealth, lost his family. His friends were dumb idiots. He lost everything. And in the midst of the worst suffering we could possibly imagine, Job is able to look up to the heavens and say, I know that my Redeemer lives. And at the last day, he will stand upon the earth. See, patience is actively participating in the will of God, even when our circumstances are difficult. But it's also trusting that God is good and that there is a day where there will be an end to our adversity. See, the promise of the gospel is this, that one day Jesus will return to earth. This is what James says here. And on that day, God will restore all that is broken. He will renew heaven. He will renew earth. He will renew heaven, earth, restore all that is broken, and he will make a home for all of those who trust in him. And in that moment, all of your adversity, all of your painful circumstances, all of your struggles with sin, they will be no more. You will no longer need to be patient in the new heavens and new earth because there will be no longer any adversity. And I know this sounds a little bit fatalistic. You go, oh, okay, so we just hope for one day God to make it all better. But I think this ought to give us hope and help us cultivate patience in the here and now. See, James is talking to Christians who are facing persecution. He's calling them to continue preaching the gospel, continue praying, continue loving the poor, continue giving their resources away, even if it meant more persecution in the present moment. And he said, it may seem like it's costing you everything now, but what you do today by the power of the Spirit will reap exponential rewards when the Lord returns. And so what does this mean for us? How do we live in such a way today that is countercultural in a culture of now? One, I think we can live with less fear. There's been a lot of fear this week or the last 15 months about what's going to happen to our country. We don't have to fear. We know the end of the story. And we don't have to get impatient when things aren't happening the way we hoped. Listen, you don't have to. If the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit is patience. And if you develop patience, what that means is that you will know in your heart that you don't have to cut ethical corners at work to speed up the promotion process. You can be patient. You don't have to sacrifice your personal integrity for short-term gains in your relational groups. When racism rears its ugly head in our culture, you don't have to retaliate in anger. But you can continue to show love and kindness, trusting that God will bring the fruit in due time. As the church, listen, we don't have to panic when the culture mocks us. We keep preaching the Bible. We keep loving our neighbors. We keep keeping the faith, knowing that God will judge in due time. And those of us who are faithful to Him will receive our reward on that day, even if it seems far away. This is what Spirit-filled patience looks like in real life. James says at the beginning of his letter, he says, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness," which is another word for patience. When your faith is tested, how you respond can actually produce patience or steadfastness or endurance or perseverance within your life. In verse 4, he says, "Let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." The Bible says that trials will test us. But if we are steadfast in patience, that will be a step in us growing more and more into the image of Jesus, which is what we ultimately want anyway, isn't it? Now, before we move into a time of communion, I want to draw your attention to Jesus. That's what we do here. We preach Jesus. I started this message with a story about a pearl, an image of a pearl. And in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus tells a story, a parable, which was about himself. And this is what he says. He says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls, who on finding one pearl of great value went and sold all he had and bought it." The scriptures call this the parable of the pearl of great price. And what Jesus is saying is, when you read the story through the lens of the cross and the resurrection, knowing that Jesus is the Messiah, Jesus is saying that he is the pearl of great price. He is the pearl that is worth selling everything you have so that you could gain that one thing. He says that he is the greatest treasure one could ever find. He's worth giving up everything so that you can have just him. Jesus plus nothing equals all we need. And listen, Jesus didn't become that pearl of great price without adversity. He was tempted beyond what we could ever imagine, yet he stayed the course. He was mocked and he was ridiculed. Yet he never spoke ill of his enemies. In fact, he prayed for them while they were killing him. He was betrayed by his closest friends, yet he washed their feet. He was unjustly sentenced to death in the place of a murderer and insurrectionist named Barabbas. But Jesus never spoke a word, and he humbly took his place. Every moment of adversity in Jesus' life, every grain of sand that lodged into his perfect life, Jesus covered it with his goodness and his compassion and his mercy, and he was nailed to the cross for it. And Jesus rose from the dead and revealed that all those little moments that looked like setbacks, that looked like nothing good could come out of them, that looked like irritants, adversity in the way that Jesus was forming his kingdom, Jesus revealed when he kicked open an empty tomb that all those irritants, all those moments of adversity were just the foundation. They were the core of the pearl that he was making. He is the pearl of great price. And that didn't come without adversity, and that didn't come without him demonstrating a type of patience that we strive for. See, without the patience of Jesus, we would have no hope in the midst of our adversity. This whole idea of waiting until the coming of the Lord, that would mean nothing to us if Jesus had not resurrected from the dead. So the way that we can live with patience in the midst of adversity is that we know that there's a day coming when Jesus will return and renew all things. And the only way he's able to do that is because he was able to endure adversity in his life. And without the Spirit of God that was given to us by Jesus, we would have no power to be patient ourselves. Will you guys pray with me?